Okay, tonight is Wednesday, May 30th. This is the Women's Mishnah Gemara Shir. We're up to Maseches Chulin, Daf Kuf Tezayin Amud Aleph. Okay, Rabotai. I'd like to begin with just one he'ara, one comment that Rabbeinu Bachya makes on the prohibition of eating basar b'chalav, which we've been studying, and then we're going to get to the Gemara in a minute, or actually to Rambam Shita. Over the last couple of weeks, we have seen a variety of potential sources which will help teach us that basar b'chalav is not only not to be cooked, as the Torah writes three times, lo tavashel, but you are not permitted to derive benefit, nor are you permitted to eat it. Fine. So we saw Rabbi Yishmael who said it says three times, lo tavashel, once for cooking, once for eating, once for hanah. We saw Rav Ashi who said, you learn it out from lo tochal kol to'eva. Anything identified as a prohibition is identified as an abomination. You're not permitted kol to'eva. We learned it out. A third possibility was that we learned it out from an extra pasuk written by Dam, that the Torah writes lo tochal concerning Dam, lo tochlenu al haaretz tishpachenu kamayim. The Torah wrote that in the parsha Bisar Ta'ava, where you would like to eat meat and the Beit HaMikdash is not nearby, so you can't bring a korban. And as a result, the Torah permits you to eat meat, not in the context of the korban, which was not permitted during the time of their 40 years of travel in the Midbar. Like we said, if you wanted a roast beef sandwich, you had to bring a korban shlamim and offer a part to the Mizbeach, offer a part to the Kohen, and the majority of meat is consumed by you and your family. However, that was only in the Midbar. Once you got to Eretz Yisrael, ki yarchev Hashem Elokecha gevulcha, under those circumstances, you're allowed to bring a korb, you're allowed to eat meat, but the Torah cautioned us, don't eat the blood. And the Torah said it three times, don't eat the blood, don't eat the blood, don't eat the blood. So we saw last week Rabbi Shimon who said that, you know what? One of those extra psukim referred to basar b'chalav. Doesn't sound terribly compelling, but that's what the Gemara said. So tonight I want to start by showing you on page 11, and that was Brett Gardner's number, because yesterday he won the game last night for the Yanks. Basically two home runs, going 4 for 5. Oh, that was a terrible game. That was the wrong game to go to, yes. Yeah. Okay, you never know, but as long as you went, that's the ikar. You went, I know you didn't have a good time, I know how painful it is to go to a game, and you lose, especially if they don't do much. Okay, but anyhow, so he writes, al derech hapshat, ta'am hamitzvah, where I bracketed, and according to the simple pshat, based on what is the reason for this mitzvah, Lefi shehu mitamtem et halev. Mish mitamtem es halev. I can only translate it in Yiddish. Es fashtopt the hearts. What that means in English, I haven't a clue. It means it pollutes your heart. This is a famous idea that exists amongst many Rishonim, that non-kosher foods, ubirosham, basar b'chalav, not only are they prohibited, but they do physical damage to you. And here, it somehow, it corrupts, pollutes your heart. Shaharei, listen to this, hechalav na'ase min hadam. What creates the milk of an animal? It's blood. The blood is converted into milk, V'hadam mizago ra. The contents of dam are very bad. Umolid achzariot. And it helps generate a sense of cruelty. V'echad mita'amei ha'isur shebo. She'eino mikabel shinui v'hitpa'alut biguf. Kishar hadvarim hane'echalim. One of the reasons for its prohibition is so that you don't do any damage, any changes to your body. Ulekach tivo hara nishar b'tocho mibli shinui. What happens is that if you're going to cook the milk and the meat together, that is never going to have a positive benefit for you. Always will be deleterious. Even though it's no longer blood, it's milk. Nonetheless, its negative characteristics cannot be overcome. And I'll show you how the Chassam Sofer in a second uses this to answer a parent who is struggling with a mentally challenged young man. Hold on one second, I'll get to it in a second. V'chein, next paragraph. V'chein dat harofim b'ta'aruvot dag u'gevina. Just like the Sfardim. Sfardim do not eat milk and cheese together. Fish. Fish and cheese. We Ashkenazim don't eat fish and meat together. Sephardim eat fish and meat together, but they will not eat fish and cheese. No bagels, cream cheese, and lox for a Sephardi. And what happens? Shinit bashlu ke'echad, shimolid tchuna ra'a. It develops very negative characteristics. V'chole hatzora'at. It leads to leprosy. Wow. So,
eating fish and cheese, though, what is the problem with fish and cheese? Why
fish and cheese leads to leprosy.
No, but what would be the problem otherwise?
There is none.
There's nothing in the Torah about it.
There is nothing. Correct. There's nothing in the Torah about eating fish and meat either together.
Right.
He's just giving you an example. Just as I say that there are medical considerations so that you should avoid eating milk and meat, while I'm at it, I'll tell you, you should also avoid eating cheese and fish. Even though that, as you said, has no biblical connection.
So you said Sfarim eat fish and meat? Or
yes, they eat fish and meat. But they do not eat fish and cheese, fish and milk. Yes.
Did he believe that these, you know, physical issues came up when non-Jews ate these things?
I have no idea. That would be a good question to ask Rabbeinu Bachya. It's a good question. Who knows? If it was a physical characteristic, it should impact everybody. Not only Jew and Gentile alike. It should. I don't think it had an impact on a Jew, nor whether it's mitamtemes halev, nobody could speak about that. Because it doesn't. That is not a physical thing, that is a spiritual. It pollutes your heart. Makes you cruel and so on and so forth. I can't testify.
I've heard that from a lot of people. If you eat non-kosher,
yes,
something, if you're in a shaman.
Right. So the Chassam Sofer, as I said, was asked by a parent whose child was severely mentally handicapped, and the only facility that was available for this child was a non-kosher facility.
And
the Chassam Sofer said no. Why are you only concerned about his body and his brain? How about his nefesh? Mm-hmm. His soul. His soul is going to be polluted. And the woman had to somehow try to care for that child. Okay. Not everybody agrees with the Chassam Sofer, but the Chassam Sofer said it. And if you remember many years ago, unfortunately, anybody in the YU community will remember this. Unfortunately, Dr. Belkin had such a child, very severely challenged, and they sent him to an institution. There were very few kosher establishments in his time, and there were some idiots in YU at a dinner which Dr. Belkin was honored. They came to protest with placards, and they wrote this. He sends his child in violation of the Chassam Sofer's edict. Why you guys were doing it? The guys who just came to YU, they never were part of YU. The troublemakers. And there were a couple of troublemakers who used to make life miserable for anybody they didn't like. Professor Feldblum, Zichron Elevracha, Dr. Belkin, Zichron Elevracha, they didn't like Dr. Belkin. So,
can I ask another question?
Sure.
If the milk is down, then why are we even able to eat it at all? Drink it at all?
Because it's not really down.
Right.
It came from blood. But it's a good question. I would ask him the same question.
Because you can't say it's the combination.
Correct. That the milk develops from the dam. Okay. I don't have a good answer for that. But I just wanted you to see this to know that this is a very popular theme which you will find in many commentaries, both Rishonim and Achronim, in explaining Ma'achalot Asurot. Ma'achalot Asurot. And the Ramban in Chumash goes wild against anybody who believes this. Goes wild against anybody who believes this.
The Rambam
does believe in it, and that's who he was attacking. The Rambam writes that there are health considerations associated with certain non-kosher species animals, but the Ramban in Parshat Shmini, where the Torah tells us the simane kashrut for an animal, a bird, and so and a fish, that's where the Ramban goes wild. He says, it's nonsense. He says, otherwise, he asks your question. Every Gentile should be sick as a dog all the time if they eat non-kosher meat. And we don't see that.
And it's a popular idea, you are what you eat.
Correct. That is correct. It's a very popular idea.
And a lot of people get better through what they give up in their food.
Yes, that is true. Okay. I'd like to now focus, in light of the background that we've seen for the last 3 weeks, I'd like to focus on Shitas HaRambam tonight. So go to page 25. Whose number is 25? Come on, you're at the game. The second baseman, Torres. Gleyber Torres.
They were all bad.
Yes. But he drove in the winning run yesterday. Yes. This is the Rambam in Hilchot Ma'achalot Asurot Perek Tet. We're going to look at Halacha Bet. The Rambam asks a question. Lo shatak hakatuv mile esor ha'achila. Rambam, in effect, is asking a question. Why is it that the Torah never wrote that you're not allowed to eat basar b'chalav? Why do I have to spend 3 shiurim focusing on 3 different approaches, and there, just for your knowledge, there are 2 others. I don't know if we'll do them. There are 2 others very similar to one of the ones that we learned last week. Lo shataka katuv mile esor achila. The Torah has not actually been silent about the prohibition against eating meat. The Torah has not been silent, even though it looks like it has been silent. Ela mipnei she'asar habishul. Since the Torah prohibited what? Cooking, I don't have to bother telling you that what? That you can't eat it. Kilomar ve'afilu bishulo asur. Not only is eating prohibited if you cook the milk and meat together, it's what? Even the cooking happens to be prohibited. Ve'ein tsarich lomar achilato. And I don't have to, says the Rambam, mention anything about not eating it. It's so abundantly evident, because if you were allowed to eat basar b'chalav, why in the world would the Torah say you're not allowed to cook it?
Because you could use it for something else, for
Hana'ah. Okay, but that the Rambam doesn't know about Hana'ah yet. Why would the Torah prohibit something if you're allowed to eat it? I'll tell you where that logic was used in another context. If I ask you a question, when does the Isur Chametz begin midoraita? When does the Isur Chametz begin midoraita? So give me a couple of possibilities.
An hour before Pesach.
No, no one says that. The logical thing would be when sundown arrives. That's the logical thing. However, that's sundown. However, Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that since the Torah writes not to eat chametz three times, lo tochal chametz, lo tochal chametz, lo tochal chametz, Rabbi Yehuda says one of the times is to teach me that the Isur of eating begins on Erev Pesach. He happens to use, I don't want to get confusing now, it starts mid-de-oraita at Chatzot, midday on Erev Pesach. The Rabbanan added two more hours. That's why we stop eating four hours into the day. 2 hours before midday, which is 6 hours into the day. Fine. Now, Rabbi Shimon does not agree with him. Rabbi Shimon says, all three times lo tochal refers to on Pesach itself. So you'll ask me, why does the Torah write three times that you're not allowed to eat? So we know the answer. To make sure that upstairs, what happens? You get three X's for doing the exact same thing. For eating one kizayis of chametz, you don't get one X, you don't get two X's, you get three X's.
Isn't also you don't get isn't that one of the two with that? That you don't get some benefit from
chametz? No.
That wasn't part of the
three? No, nobody said that. Even Rabbi Yehuda says the other time is to teach you that if chametz she'avar olav ha-pesach, if you didn't sell it and it was around in a Jewish possession, you're not allowed to eat it after Pesach. He believes that it's asur mid'oraisa to eat chametz, not like we paskin, it's only a knas, it's a fine, asur midrabanan. But he, Rabbi Yehuda, said it's asur midoraisa. So Rabbi Shimon says all three times are for Pesach itself. So now I will ask you, you know something about chametz on Erev Pesach, even according to Rabbi Shimon. How do I know you can't? Because what does the Torah tell you to do on Erev Pesach? Get rid of your chametz.
You don't have it yet.
The Torah says, "Ach bayom harishon tashbitu." Get rid of your chametz. Now, the word bayom harishon, the Gemara says, means Erev Yantif. It's not my discussion now. Say many rishonim. Why would the Torah tell you to get rid of it if you're allowed to eat it? What purpose would there be? None. Hence, even though I, Rabbi Shimon, do not have a lav that you're not allowed to eat chametz on Erev Pesach, I don't have a lav, I have what's called an isur aseh. A prohibition that results by virtue of the Torah telling me to do something else. If the Torah is telling me to do what? Destroy my chametz, obviously you can't eat it. Yeah. Because if you could eat it, why would I have to destroy it? Makes no sense. So too, says Rambam here, you know why I, Rabbeinu Moshe, say you're not allowed to eat basar b'challav? Because if you were allowed to eat it, why would the Torah tell you not to cook it?
So there, it could be a reason for that, because it could be a separate issur not to cook, but you would be allowed to eat things where you didn't cook them together.
What else? How else would you prepare?
There are many
broil
dishes.
It?
No. You cook meat separately, and you put cheese on top of your beef stroganoff.
Okay.
You're not cooking them together. It's a separate issur. You put sour
but
cream.
But why would the Torah tell you that? Putting cheese, the Torah never prohibited it. You're allowed to take
cheese and put it on top of your burger. Midoraisa, there's no prohibition whatsoever, as long as you don't cook it.
No, no, you can eat it.
You are allowed to eat a cheeseburger according to Torah law, as long as you don't cook it together. You cook the hamburger, you take a piece of cheese, put it on the burger, you're allowed to eat it according to Torah law, because you didn't cook it. Well, why would the Torah, what purpose would there be in prohibiting the cooking if 5 seconds later, if I did cook it, you're allowed to eat it? Therefore, says Rambam, I have my own explanation how I know that you're not allowed to eat basar b'challah. How do I know you're not allowed to eat basar b'challah? Because the Torah said you're not allowed to cook it. And I can't tell, I can't explain why the Torah would prohibit cooking if the item that was cooked was permitted to be eaten. Obviously, you can't eat it. Hold on, 1 second. Hold on. The Rambam says, I'm going to give you an analogy to this type of logic. He gives us an analogy. Look at, let's read the Rambam. I'm going to read it again. Halacha bet. Lo shatak hakatuv mile esor ha'achila. Even though it appears that the Torah was shatak, mazashika, silent, didn't say anything about what? Not eating basar b'challah, doesn't say anything. But lo shatak. Ela mipnei she'asar ha'bishul. Because the Torah, God knew that what did he prohibit? Cooking. Kilomar. Ve'afilu bishul lo asur. Even cooking milk and meat is together. Ein tzarich lomar achilato. Kimo she'shatak mile esor habat me'achar she'asar bat habat. Says, I'll read it again, let me just tell you what it is. If you look at Perek Yudchet of Sefer Vayikra, Parshat Acharemot, it has the list of all of the incestuous relationships. The Torah never says that you're not allowed to have relations with your daughter. Never says it. But it does say you're not allowed to have relations with your granddaughter. Bat habat. So Rambam says, of course bat is prohibited. Why do you think a bat habat is prohibited? Why do you think your granddaughter is prohibited? Because she comes from whom? From your daughter. Well, if you're not allowed to have relations with your granddaughter, obviously you can't have relations with what? With your daughter. So the Rambam says, here there is no one who ever said that you're allowed to marry your daughter. No one has ever said something so stupid. And yet the Torah doesn't say you're not allowed to have relations with your daughter. How does the halakha establish the prohibition? By virtue of the fact that it does say, Ervat bat bincha o bat bitcha. Lo tigale. It says you're not allowed to have relations with your grandchild. Well, stands to reason that if you can't have relations with your grandchild, who is more distant away from you in terms of life, certainly you can't have a relationship with your daughter or a woman with a grandson, with a son. It's ridiculous. That's what the Rambam says. Same thing is true about Lo Tivasher. If the Torah, prohibits cooking 3 times, obviously you're not allowed to eat it. Because if you were allowed to eat it, why would the Torah bother to, or for what logic would it be that you couldn't cook it? That's the Rambam says. Now I am going to ask you to give me a question. I'm not going to give you the answer. I'm going to take a little nap or check on the Yankee score. And until you give it, based on the 3-4 shiurim of the last 3 or 4 shiurim, where we have focused on a gemara to do A, what was our objective each one of the weeks? Ask the question of the Rambam. And you'll be asking the Lecha Mishnah, one of the commentaries on the side of the Rambam, his question against the Rambam. Think about the topic, just the general, generic topic that we focused on the last 3-4 weeks.
I even started at the beginning with a little review today for that very reason. For that very reason. Should I pull out my phone?
What's the question?
The question is, I want you to ask the question.
Based on reading this Rambam, I want you to attack Rabbeinu Moshe.
We didn't say we explained it 3 times.
Say it a little sharper.
Wait, I can hear you, sir.
He didn't explain the 3 times. Say it sharper.
Well, there is some... You know, every word means something. So the fact that he... No. Okay.
Say it
sharper. But this is not sharper. This is just different.
What did we spend 3/4 year doing? Trying to establish what?
What's the reason that we're not allowed to...
What is the reason we're not allowed to what?
You're not allowed to eat. Because it says...
And the Gemara gave 3 derivations. I told you there were 5. We learned 3 of them. Why did the Rambam just quote one of them?
Because he is
it's a Gemara.
Because he is he's not quoting
at anyone.
Yeah, but he has his own reason. That's different.
Okay, but that's not the style of the Rambam. It's not the style of anybody.
Okay.
If there is no Gemara, if there is nothing in the Torah text, like by Bat Bitcha, nobody has come up with a halach drash to teach me that you're not allowed to have relations with your daughter. Nobody. So obviously it's logical, an extension from your granddaughter. But here, Rabbeinu Shalom, the Gemara itself tells us why you're not allowed to eat. Because it says 3 times, Lo Sevashem. It says, Lo Tochal Toto Eva. It says, Lo Tochlenu Baidam. What's the Rabbeinu have to make up his own thing for? Ah, you know why? I figured it out. It's just... Or basic. It's basic. If the Torah prohibited it, it was that simple. We didn't have to waste all that time in the Gemara.
Plus, which he doesn't explain why the Torah said it 3 times.
Correct. Well, he doesn't.
Some of the explanations didn't.
They don't believe. As I gave you the illustration with Lo Tochal Alav Chametz. Why is it written 3 times Lo Tevashem? So that if you do cook, how many X's do you get in your book? 3, not 1. That happens from time to time.
And the example is actually the opposite, because the example he just gave is that you can't have relations with your daughter because it says granddaughter, right?
Right.
The granddaughter comes to
correct.
It's the opposite with eating and cooking. You're saying I can't. The cooking doesn't come from the eating. It's the opposite.
The eating comes from the cooking. I understand. It's the right. Okay. It's correct. It's the less I hear, but it's the Rambam's nice. I'm not saying that his analogy is wrong. His analogy is right on the mark. Yes.
His main objection or his main explanation is because it was a pagan practice. So, the cooking.
Correct.
Right? So then why is he using that to talk about eating, if he thinks it's a totally different issue?
Why isn't he one?
If the not cooking...
Right. That's why the Rambam said that although other prohibited foods... There are no restrictions against cooking them. None. I take a piece of nevela meat, you can cook it, so I'll make the pot nevela, who cares? No isur. Right. The Rambam mother, how come the Torah did prohibit cooking of basar b'chalav?
Because of the pagan ritual. Right, but then how does he get from there to the eating?
Because if you were allowed to eat it, in a pagan ritual, do you think the Torah would say, oh, you're just not allowed to cook, but then you can eat that which was cooked for the purpose of Avodah Zarah? You're not allowed to have any benefit whatsoever from anything that smacks of Avodah Zarah. That's correct. Not allowed to.
He doesn't mention that.
But he doesn't say
what? We'll get to Rambam's Hana. That's not another 1 shiur. 5 more shiurim. So we understand the Rambam sheet about Hana. So much discussion about it. Let me give you another illustration. Go to page number 40.
But we didn't answer your question.
Yeah. Which question?
The question is why did he not quote the earlier?
Hold on a sec. I'm not finished.
So who's 40?
Who's 40? The guy who's pitching tonight, Severino.
Yeah.
When I came in, they were winning 3-2.
Says this is Hilchot Tumat Met. Can anybody describe three ways in which you can become tamei from something that was tamei?
Touching
is one.
Being next to it.
Same house. That's only by mate. Good. Let's talk about tamei. Okay. That's. I want to talk about the primary way. Okay. What else? No. Second levels. Initial thing. What else besides touching, carrying, even though you don't touch it?
Like on a stretcher.
On a board, a stretcher. Carrying is, it's like the Torah says, kol hanosei is tamei ad haaretz. So
that
now.
That's not because you're touching something that's touching it.
What?
That's not because you're touching something that's touching it.
No.
It's all just the nature of it.
That's correct. Okay. So the Rambam writes, tumat masa mipi hashmua. The tuma of a mate, when you are carrying the mate, not in an enclosed area, but an open area, and you didn't touch the mate, it's on a long stretcher and there are poles that make sure you don't hover over the mate. You're not. Says the Rambam, there is no source for this whatsoever. Mipi Ashmua, it's been given from tradition. It's what everybody hears from their father, from their Rebbe.
Why don't we say
that? Hold on one second. And how do we know that it's prohibited? Kal v'chaymer hadvarim. We make a kal v'chaymer. Im nivela shehi tum'at erev. Nivela. A nevela is an animal that died without a kosher shechita. Not only are you not allowed to eat it, if you touch it, you become tamei. But how long do you become tamei if you touch a nevela? You go to the mikveh that day, and you have harev shemesh nightfall, you're already tahor. You are already tahor. So if nevela, which is only tum'at erev, tamei until the night. Ve'eina mitam'a be'ohel. And it does not make you tamei by being in the same tent. If there is a dead animal or a dead piece of meat from a non-kosher animal, and I just walk into the room, I do not become tamei. But nonetheless, mitam'a be'masa, but if I carry this piece of meat without touching it, and not being in the same room, I become tamei. Shine emar, v'hanosei et nivlatam. If you carry the nivela, you become tamei. Hameis lo kol shekein. Certainly, if you're dealing with a mace, what stringencies does a mace have above and beyond the nivela? If you become tamei, how long do you remain tamei for tumas meis? 7 days, not until that night. Plus, going to the mikveh is not enough. What do you have to do? You have to be sprinkled with the ashes of the paraduma, and entering into the same room makes you tamei. Just entering into the room with a meis, even if you don't touch it. You don't carry it. So if nevela is mitame with carrying, even though it has its leniencies, the two leniencies. One, that it's only till the night. Two, that it does not mitame be'ohel. So certainly tumas meis, which is a 7-day tame, and it's mitame be'ohel, even though the Torah never writes that if you carry a deceased in an open area and don't touch it, the Torah never writes that what? That you are tamei. It's got to be tamei. So the Rambam uses that, and he brings the same analogy in line 3. V'yeroi Ali, line 3, word 7. V'yeroi Ali, it appears to be, sheshatak mimena hakatu, the Torah was silent, kiderech sheshatak me'isur habat. Just like the Torah never said anything about having relations about your daughter, with your daughter. Lepisha asar befeirush afilu bataba. Vishasak meisur basa b'chalav. And the Torah never said a word about not eating basa b'chalav. Lepisha asar befeirush afilu bishulav. Because the Torah prohibited black on blue even its cooking. Certainly the eating is prohibited. So the Rambam here makes 5 blocks, 10 blocks in the Gemara Chulin that we've been struggling with as if it doesn't exist. And he says, you don't need any sources. Were they all used to Tana and waste their time with? So the Rambam was attacked by many based on the fact that he decided to... So go to page number 99 for a minute, which is the lesson this year.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Does anybody care about why these things were not spoken out directly? In other words, is there any attention given to it? Because I'm sure there are other places in the Torah where everything is enumerated carefully and not skipped.
Correct.
So there must be some import in the fact that we have to learn it out from something
else. It's a very good question. It's a very good question. I have not found any good answer, or maybe there are, I just haven't found, why did the Torah omit such a critical halakha? Yeah. That carrying a mace, you become tummy.
Or any of these things.
Or any of these things. Why didn't the Torah write that you're not allowed to have relations with your daughter? Why didn't the Torah write? One extra word is there, ervas bitcha, oh bat bitcha, that's it. Ooh, the Torah's missing... trying to save two words? I don't know. Every other relationship in the text is in the text. And if it's not in the text, it's permissible. For example, is a person permitted to marry his aunt?
Yes.
The answer is no.
No, but the uncle...
But an uncle can marry his niece. He's allowed to. Now, how do I know? Because the Torah didn't prohibit it. The Torah does prohibit somebody's achot avicha or achot imecha. Torah black and white says you can't marry your aunt.
So you would think that you could.
So I would have thought that maybe, you can have relations with your daughter, you can marry your daughter. Sounds a little bizarre, but who knows? Strange. I don't know. Why didn't the Torah just write lo tochal basa? It's lo tivashel, v'lo tochlenu. That would have been it. Could have closed up half of the second school.
Hashem needs us to have things to have exegesis better discuss.
Yes.
The more.
Yes.
This is part of who we are.
Yes, that's correct.
But mystery.
That is correct. But if you're already having most of the other stuff itemized, why just this little detail? Yeah. Okay. It's a little unusual. It's a little unusual. In fact, the question is even further intensified on page 1 and page 2. Further intensified on page 1 and page 2.
These two quotes from page 1 and page 2 are from the Rambam's not his major work, the Mishneh Torah. That's the first source that we learn in Hilchos Machlokes, but it is in his Sefer HaMitzvot, where the Rambam quoted what he believed are the 613 mitzvot. Everyone believes that there are 613 mitzvot. But there is no agreement as to what constitutes the 613 mitzvot. So the person who the Rambam was basing his book on was the Bahad. The Bahad, the Baal HaLachot, one of the late Geonic sources, He wrote a compilation of mitzvot, and it annoyed the Rambam terribly. Because he classified amongst the 613 the following mitzvot. Hadlakat Neirot Chanukah, Kriyat HaMegillah. And the Rambam said, how could that be a mitzvah midoraisa if the event didn't happen for another 2,000 years? Are you crazy? But the Baha counted seven mitzvot midrabanan. We know that the obligation to wash your hands before you eat bread was created by Shlomo HaMelech. Doesn't say any place in the Torah you got to wash before you eat bread. And yet the Baha counts that as one of the 613. So the Rambam, because of this Baha, he couldn't sleep for many, many years. How's this guy? He's the only thing in circulation. Everybody's going to believe him. I got to write my own book. So he wrote a Sefer HaMitzvot. The way he wrote it was 14 rules about what constitutes a mitzvah and what does not constitute one of the 613, called Shrashim. Just pages and pages of rules. How did I go about systematically making my count? Then he listed his 248 positive commandments and 365 negative commandments. He listed that. Now, not every... The Rambam saw the Rambam's list and he said, hey, I disagree with him. He didn't count everything either, which he should have counted. The most famous one, of course, is... Living in Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam didn't count it as one of the 613. Even though he glorifies, in his halachic work, the Mishneh Torah, glorifies, but he didn't count it as one of the 613.
But there's certain mitzvot there's certain mitzvot that you can always only do by Eretz Yisrael, so maybe it's implicit.
That was Rav Kook's answer. He counted, did Rav Kook, 221 mitzvot that can only be fulfilled in Israel. So he said, you don't have to count something that is abundantly evident. Just as the Baha did not count the first commandment as one of the mitzvot. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, to believe in God, the Baha said that's not a mitzvah. I don't have to count that. Why? Because if you don't believe in God, what's the rest of the 612? Who cares about the 612? So that, if something is so abundantly evident, you don't have to count it as a mitzvah. That was the Baha. The Rambam disagreed with that too. Fine. But now we're going to read the Rambam's list on page 1. Actually, start with page 2, because that's much more in order, page 2. Here is the mitzvah which the Rambam writes. HaMitzvah HaKuf Peivav. Mitzvah number 186e. Shehiz Hiranu Mibashel Basar B'Chalav. Where the Torah prohibits cooking basar b'chalav. Vahu Amro, God said, Yit'aleh, may his name be exalted, Lo tevashel gedibah chalev imo. Umi shebishlo loke, anybody who cooks milk and meat gets lashes, Va'afa pishalo achlo, even though we didn't eat it. Now we go to page number 1, and this is mitzvah number 187 of the mitzvot lo ta'aser. V'hamitzvah ha'kuf pei zayin hi shehiz hiranu me'echol basar b'chalav, where God has cautioned us not to eat milk and meat cooked together. How do I know? V'hu amro, and God said, gam kein lo tivashel gidi b'chalev imo pa'am shniyah. He's going to get to that in the next one. About that there is a third prohibition of Hana'ah. Fine. So
Could you see
the Kuf Peivav is Israel now? No, it says Kuf Peivav what it is. We just read it.
I'm saying it's
official.
But if he cooks it and he gets lashes for just cooking.
Just cooking.
Isn't that a form of...
What's the Hana'ah? I had no Hana'ah. I just cooked it. I didn't eat it.
You're cooking for somebody.
No, I'm cooking because I like to cook. I'm going to feed it to my Gentile neighbor. My Gentile worker. Says the Rambam, you get lashes. And then, All of a sudden here, who does, which source does the Rambam quote as the basis of not eating basar b'chalav? He quotes Rabbi, the first one, the second one, Rabbi Yishmael, three times. The first time is basar achila. The second time is our first time, basar bishul. Second time, so the Lechem Mishnah asks the question. If Rambam himself employed in his formulation of the mitzvot Rabbi Yishmael's opinion, why in his primary halachic text so he have to come up with this new ingenuity? You know why you're not allowed to eat basar b'chalav? The Torah said you're not allowed to cook it. Must be that you're not allowed to eat. Who needs it? He himself knows the Gemara and he himself quoted it. Quoted it. So there are many who speculate that the Rambam changed his mind often from the time he wrote Sefer HaMitzvot, when he was a young man of about 18, and when he finished his Mishneh Torah when he was about 44. He changed his mind. Okay, that's what some say, changed his mind. There are hundreds of other theories as to why the Rambam did that, but let's now see on page 99 the Lechem Mishnah's question. Oh yes, it's 50, 60 times. And it's worse in those cases because he changed the halakha. And the same thing with his other work, which he really wrote when he was young, the Perish HaMishnayos, his commentary on the Mishnah. He also wrote that very young, unbelievable, to write a commentary on every Mishnah and Shas. 63 Mishnayos, those 63 volumes of Mishnah. And he wrote a commentary also at a young man. What he did, the Rambam, was just unbelievable. Unbelievable. He is the only code that we have in all of Jewish history codes who has written on every halakha that ever existed and will exist. All the other codes only dealt with halakha lema'aseh, halakha that was applicable to them. So there was nothing about the laws of Beit HaMikdash. There is no Beit HaMikdash. There's nothing along about Tumim Tahara, because that's only a function of what? Of going on to the Beit HaMikdash. So all those things, there's no commentary whatsoever. Anytime the Gemara discusses that, the Rush doesn't say a word, the Rif doesn't say a word. It's only the Rambam who wrote halacha of every single halacha that ever existed, every korban, every this, and that's why the Rambam is so great. But anyhow,
one interesting thing though is he's the one who possibly says we're not going to have carbonate again. Why is he codifying it? Because he thinks we're going to do it again. Isn't that a
life change? Yes, he changed his mind. Yeah. Or, as many of our professors who have been here, he wrote the guide to the perplexed only for the intelligentsia. He says, for the Amaratzin, I didn't write this book. And he would never have said that had his intention be for the ignoramusai of Am Yisrael, of which he wrote there are many. He said that. Rabin Hain. I would never have written the guide, what I put in that book, knowing that people that wouldn't understand me. So, anyhow, but it's something that I happen to like that Rabbah.
Yeah, right.
About the Korban. Lots of us kind of like that Rabbah. Yes.
How old was he when he wrote the book?
I think he finished it of Aravuchim, I don't know. Says the Rambam, it says the Lechem Mishnah, Lo Shataka Katuv, we read that Rambam. The Torah was silent, not because it's permissible, because it understood that you're not allowed to eat basar b'chalav. Lich Ora, at first glance, Nira, it appears, the Rabbeinu Lo Pasak, Kishum Echad Mehani Tanoi va'amorai, the perikala basar. It looks like the Rambam has not paskin like, not cited, not quoted any of the Tanaim or Amoraim who spent pages trying to link the prohibition of eating meat to a pasuk. The chad mapik isur hachala ba'achila milo tochal, that was Ravashi, lo tochal kol toleva. V'chad milo tochelu, that was by dam. V'achrina omar, lo tovashel gedi b'chalevi mo gimul ta'amin. Echad l'isur achila, v'echad l'isur ana, v'echad l'isur bishul. V'hu zal, and he, lo katav kan, ela kimosha omar, b'vayikro rabba. Says the Lecha Mishneh, Rambam didn't make up this logic himself. It was a midrash. The shatak hakatuv, the pasuk was silent. The heve kimo habat, kimo habat. So what? His question now is, why does the Rambam follow a medrash when you have a Gemara, which is far more authoritative for halachic purposes than a medrash? Well, why does the Rambam do it?
Well, not the style of the Rambam.
What?
Not the style of the Rambam to follow Medrash.
He often quotes Medrash, but it's a Medrash halacha, not a Medrash agado, or just stam like that, things like that. Then in line 5, Va'od yesh tema, there's a second puzzlement, the b'minyan ha-mitzvot, in the book we just looked at, Sefer ha-mitzvot, nira de pasuk rabbeinu, Kimanta Omar, Lo Tivashel Gidi Gimel Pa'amin, Echad Yisrachil, etc., etc. So why does the Rambam quote this? Why does the Rambam quote this? So, I'll just tell you something that we said about 4 or 5 weeks ago, which he uses to answer it. He says that that wouldn't work. Because the Rambam doesn't quote that. Okay, he says something, I don't quite understand what he says. But just remember the question. Remember the question. And then...
Who's the Lecha Mishneh?
Lecha Mishneh is a commentary who lived around the 16th century, and he's printed in the standard Rambam, right underneath the Rambam. There are 3 either Mishnehs or Torahs surrounding the Rambam. There's the Kesef Mishneh, who's Rabbi Yosef Karo. There's the Magid Mishneh, who was a late Rishon, and then there's the Lecha Mishneh on the bottom of the page. So those are printed in every standard Rambam. Every standard Rambam.
Yeah. Since the 16th
century. What is that? I think in the 16th century. Yeah. Good. Excellent. Okay, so now we at least know the Rambam. At least know the Rambam. Okay, we'll stop here. We'll continue next week with an opinion that says that basa b'chalav is not asur b'hanah. Think of that next week. That basa b'chalav, you're allowed to derive benefit from it, just like you're permitted to derive benefit from any other piece of meat that you're not allowed to eat. The vela meat, treifa meat, we'll see. And he's going to learn it out from treifa. You're allowed to have enough. And we'll see. There's plenty to discuss on that.
Are we
going to
find out the answer
to the round? Yeah. Do your homework.
That's all.
We have a pasta question.
Go right ahead.
You said if you made the meatballs, you shut up your